I'm here today with Charles Tripp, who is a professor of politics at SOAS, University of London. Dr. Tripp has researched extensively on the Middle East and on the nature of autocracy and state and resistance in the region. Dr. Tripp, thanks for being with us today on the Global Observatory. I wanted to get started by asking you the assessment of the current situation within Iraq. ISIS has been gaining extensively within the country, and given its territorial gains that it has made in the majority Sunni areas, and in addition to the reports that Kurdish fighters have now seized the town of Kirkuk, do you think Iraq is disintegrating into three de facto states, a Sunni, a Kurdish, and a Shia state?
I don't think it's got to that stage yet. I think that since 2003, there's been a de facto two states in Iraq. One is the one ruled from Baghdad and the other from Erbil in the north in the Kurdish area. When you look at the solidity of the Kurdish area, it certainly looks like a state to me. It has its own economy, armed forces, sovereignty, parliament, and so on. I think the situation in the northwest of Iraq, the so-called Sunni areas of Iraq, is far more fluid. And really, one doesn't see, despite the claims that it is going to establish the Islamic State of Iraq and the Sham, it's still a very uncertain situation. I don't think one could talk about three states at all, no.
Do you think that this advance is having any kind of effect on Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's personal legitimacy as a leader? And if you think that's the case, what do you think are his options for preserving the integrity of the country as well as his office?
I think that's the real effect of the advance of ISIS over the last 2 weeks or so, not simply on the populations of northwest Iraq who had to suffer underneath them, but in a sense also on Prime Minister Maliki, who's just come out of a general election, believing that he has a mandate to rule the country for another 5 years. But there were clearly people who were unhappy about that on his own side as well as his opponents. And you could argue that the military successes of ISIS and the hopeless performance of the Iraqi security forces is an indictment of Maliki on two counts. One is that he never appointed a Minister of Defense. He claimed to be Minister of Defense himself. And the other is that he has exercised his full powers as Commander-in-Chief of the Iraqi Armed Forces and has used those powers really to try and create a loyal following, but in doing so, to undermine the effectiveness of the armed forces itself. So on two counts, you could argue his authority and legitimacy, not so much from popular mandate, but from the way he's behaved, has been undermined.
Just this morning, there were reports suggesting that Mr. al-Maliki is actually managing to protect Baghdad and is trying to gain control back of Tal Afar. What's your assessment of these specific efforts in Baghdad?
Well, I'm sure that not just he, but most of the population of Baghdad are trying to defend the city itself. And I suppose also one could argue that the attempt to recapture Tal Afar in the north is a way of trying to reverse some of the obvious defeats that the Iraqi army has suffered. So I can imagine that Nouri al-Maliki is now trying to act, being Minister of Defense, act, being Commander-in-Chief in a more effective way. But of course, whether he'll be successful is another matter. I think it's very unlikely, given the nature of ISIS, that they could ever capture Baghdad. So there's also a question there about whether he's jumping on a bandwagon, in a sense, that it's the people of Baghdad who will defend themselves, and Nouri al-Maliki will try and claim the credit.
I would like to now maybe step out and try to get the larger picture. What do you think are the effects that these developments are having or will have on the sectarian balance across the Middle East region?
Well, in some ways, I think these developments have been a symptom of a growing sectarian conflict across the region, or a region which has been marked by conflicts that have taken on an increasingly sectarian hue. I don't think the conflicts are only about sectarian difference, but certainly in some places it's been convenient to emphasize religious difference between Sunni and Shi'i, and between different kinds of Sunni, different kinds of Shi'i, and so on. So I think in some ways it's a symptom of that, but insofar as a symptom of it, it's also feeding into it. And if the ISIS puts themselves forward as the representative of a certain way of being Muslim against three-quarters of the population or more of Iraq itself, then clearly that will sharpen the sectarian divide. Equally, with the accusations that Maliki and others represent only one sect in politics in Iraq, which isn't completely true, but they certainly behaved rather that way. That's also fed into the connections with the sectarian difference. And if you add to that Iran on one side and the civil war on the other, one can see that, unfortunately for Iraq and for the region, the present conflict does indeed seem to underline the fact that the only major conflict in the region is one between Sunni, which isn't true, but certainly is powerfully present as an image.
I'm glad you mentioned Iran earlier, and one cannot speak about Sunni-Shia divide without mentioning Iran. There have been rumors of U.S.-Iranian cooperation on a possible response to the crisis, and reports have emerged saying that U.S. and Iranian diplomats actually have met in Vienna on the sidelines of the ongoing nuclear talks this week and have discussed the crisis. Whether or not they discussed an actual joint response is not clear. How likely do you think that Iran will actually get involved in pushing back ISIS within Iraqi borders?
Well, there are reports that Iran is already militarily involved. Whether those are true or not, we don't know. In other words, that they sent military personnel or advisors across to assist the Iraqis in repelling the ISIS fighters. So there's certainly that sense of direct involvement, and they've made threats to ISIS that if they approach 100 kilometers of the Iran's borders, they bombarded by the Iranians themselves. So there's that direct military element, but there's also, of course, a larger political question, which is that Maliki has been or has enjoyed a good deal of Iranian support over the last 6 or 7 years. And there's a question mark there, which is about whether Iran, having backed him as the factor for stability and so on in Iraq, is really having second thoughts about that. So I think in the longer term, there is a question about whether Iran really wants to go on backing Maliki or someone else who can perhaps deliver a more orderly, more stable Iraq.
This is Iran's set of options. What do you think are the options for Western powers, and specifically the U.S. and those countries that joined the United States in 2003 during the invasion? What do you think the options for these countries are in Iraq, and whether they have any kind of interest at stake in the country?
Oh, I think they have interests at stake. I don't think they have much power to influence anything. I mean, I think the only country that might have some influence and power to actually shape things in Iraq would be the United States. But ironically, Maliki, the Prime Minister of Iraq, is to some extent a product of a tacit collusion between Iran and the United States going back to 2006. And one could argue that Maliki will be threatened most if his two major backers, Iran and the United States, suddenly withdraw their confidence from him.
I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, the Obama administration mentioned that it would send 275 Marines to Baghdad with the specific quote-unquote mission of safeguarding the embassy and the embassy personnel. Do you think this move has any kind of message behind it? What do you think the significance of this announcement is?
Well, I suppose it's twofold. One is a reassuring United States, where Obama has come into a huge amount of criticism from domestic audiences that he didn't foresee this and that he's putting American interests and possibly even lives at stake. So the last thing he would want is that anyone in the embassy or wherever in Baghdad, United States citizen, would be threatened by kinds of developments that we've seen taking place. But I suppose the other one is a marker of complete loss of confidence in Maliki's ability, the Iraqi government's ability, even to secure its own capital. So in that sense, I don't think this is a military move to support the government of Iraq. Rather, it could be a military move to suggest that the government of Iraq is completely hopeless and that under the conditions that exist at the moment, the only way in which Americans can be sure of American safety is through American forces helping them to escape if necessary.
So do you think if the Obama administration or the West in general lose enough confidence in al-Maliki's power to counter this threat, do you think an air or military response is actually on the table?
I don't know. I mean, Obama said that everything's on the table because no statesman wants to have their hands tied. But clearly there are people who think that any kind of airstrike would probably be deeply unwise, given the nature of the ISIS advance. The ISIS advance, after all, isn't sort of columns of tanks. It's not a conventional army moving in on Baghdad, but people in pickup trucks whizzing around through the countryside, people on foot. This is going to be very, very difficult to deal with, I imagine, from a military logistical point of view. So there is a question about whether any American military aid will actually have any effect at all on the advance of ISIS, or whether it will simply be seen as yet another example of the United States having recourse to military force where any other method will do. So I imagine that's one of the reasons why they're talking to the Iranians, if they are, about what are the options for these two major backers of al-Maliki, faced by an insurgency that al-Maliki can't deal with, and wondering about how to replace him, possibly, with another person who could bring a more orderly future to Iraq.
Dr. Tripp, thank you so much for being with us on the Global Observatory today.
Thank you very much.